You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. Powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scars. My co-host tonight, Daniel Sperry. Dan, Michael Starry is out. What in general do you think about it? How are you doing? And do you have any response or comment to the rumor about to start that you have interviewed for the position?
if I'd interviewed for the position, I'd take it in a heartbeat if they offered it to me. Although I have no experience or coaching licenses. Because he probably needed to go, and I'll talk more about it a little bit later, but he probably needed to go, but at the same time, it sucks that they have to fire someone, like, within their first year. But it was pretty clear that he was so far out of his depth, in what he was doing here, that it's not, I'm not surprised based on what I've seen this season. It's just really frustrating that for some reason, you know, Jesse Furianelli comes in, you know, or hindsight's 2020, but he cans Dom Kinnear. He has virtually the same roster, in a playoff position last year in the West and playing well, and then just cans him because he doesn't think he has a future there. And then ever since, it's just been a big question mark, and they were lucky to even make the postseason last year. So, like, there's a lot with this Quakes team that's kind of frustrating, and I'll get into more of it later. It's probably good for them in the long term that Starry was gone, just because, like, you have to understand the way that that club operates, and a lot of it is the manager probably has no say in what's going on. And the players that he's getting. So it's just his job to coach whoever the general manager gives him. There is a working relationship there, and there was, but the players clearly had not bought into it. And there was plenty, it was just clear that he could not find a consistently correct way to set up the team, because they did have success, and then they abandoned what worked for them, and then they go and get shellacked over the weekend at home to Sporting Kansas City. The San Jose Earthquakes have only won 2 games at home all season long. That is by far the worst mark of any of the bad teams in MLS. It's a pretty pathetic showing there. So I'm not shocked he's gone. It's probably about time. There's a lot of factors that probably went into him not succeeding, that are probably more general club issues. But at the same time, like, if they're going to operate the way they're operating, it's probably the best decision at this point.
I agree with you, Dan, that I think absolutely Starry did not deserve to come back as a head coach. Just, you didn't really see, you know, even if you're not seeing results, are you seeing some level of measurable progress in terms of, are they doing a better job of implementing the system? Is the system changing? Is he clearly learning on the job as so many first-year coaches in MLS who are international coaches, who come in with little understanding of MLS and the various wonkiness? And I didn't really see him making any progressions in terms of him understanding of the inner workings of MLS or the American player or how the homegrown system and the salary cap and all of that is unique to MLS compared to anything he would have experienced in Scandinavia. I didn't see any massive improvements in terms of any of the young players like that. You know, I don't even know if Gilbert Fuentes has been on the field. You know, I know Nick Lima's there, but so I didn't really see that. I didn't really see any progress from the existing players that they had. He's had a lot of players on his squad who frankly have not been productive for large swaths of the game. And then I don't see anything structurally improving about the team in terms of what their tactical plan is. You know, I couldn't name to you, Dan, what the most common common formation the San Jose Earthquakes have played, because it's changed and it's changed from game to game and opponent to opponent. And then you combine that with, I think it was Florin Youngworth for an extended period of time was essentially just putting the team on blast with all of his hot takes in the post game. So it was clearly an unrestful locker room, a bunch of unhappy players, a poorly constructed team, no measurable progress or anything like, well, at least this one thing is going well that makes you slightly less pessimistic for 2019. I think all of that adds up to, you know, you have to make some sort of change. And I think, you know, at the very least, Muninelli was able to see that and make that change, even though, you know, why didn't this come 2 months earlier? Or if we're really having this conversation, is that not really an indictment of Muninelli as GM? He spent a lot of money on players who haven't been productive, center backs who I couldn't even name them for you right now because they haven't even been able to make it onto the field. And then also, this is now what this will be. Steve Ralston is taking over as interim head coach, folks. Now, you'll remember him as a player from his long time with the New England Revolution. He was also with the U.S. national team for about a decade. And then most recently as a post player, he's mostly been an assistant following Dominic Kinnear around. He was with them with the Houston Dynamo, followed Kinnear to the San Jose Earthquakes, and then he's been with the club in various capacities, independent of Dom's dismissal 2 years ago now. So now he's taking over as the interim head coach for the remainder of the season, all six games left. But Dan, I you have to wonder at this point of with everything that went wrong, this was Fiorinelli's guy, especially after Mike Leach took over, after Dominic Kinnear got him to the playoffs, and then he was the non-interim head coach who didn't need to be fired, who just wasn't staying on as the interim non-interim head coach. What do you make of the timing of the Starry firing, you know, whether or not it should have occurred sooner or later, and how much of this is really just an indication that it wasn't really his fault, where it's the people above him that are put him in a position to not be successful and ultimately put the Quakes in a position to be possibly the worst team in MLS in 2018?
Yeah, like that. Like I said, there's a lot of moving parts to this. I mean, you have to understand this front office pretty much operates. I wouldn't even say Chris Leach is being allowed to operate as a technical director. From the indications that I've gotten is that, I mean, Jesse Fiorinelli pretty much pulls all the strings as far as players, coming in and all of that. I think the number one thing that I think with Sarri is that his reputation coming in was that he was a really good man manager who had a penchant for tinkering with tactics here and there. And that's really intriguing to me because that's virtually Dom Kinnear, who he fired anyways. So, I mean, like for like, it's basically the same thing. The number one thing that the Earthquakes don't have, which I think kind of, if you want to build something, you need to have, and I had a very long conversation with Peter Vermees today about it for an article that's coming up later this week. But we talked philosophy behind building it, and the idea that he stressed so heavy with the idea of a model of play within a system to set it up. You look at the New York Red Bulls and how they've been able to sustain success regardless of who walks in the door as a manager or as a player personnel. Young players can just step right in and they perform, seemingly from USL and all that. And that's because the players are playing in the exact role at the lower levels. There is a 100% understanding, and a 100% buy-in from the players into this culture of the team and the way that they are going to build their team and the way that they are going to play. Jesse Marsh did it so well with them. I think Real Salt Lake is a team that has been doing it well, recently. I'm trying to think of, you know, there's Atlanta a little bit. They're just supremely talented all over the place and they spend a whole lot. And Sporting Kansas City don't spend a whole lot, but they're supremely talented everywhere and they're efficient with their spending and stuff like that. And San Jose kind of operates at the type of a budget that a Sporting Kansas City would. So you would think that they would try and make, you know, if Jesse is trying to build a long-term project in San Jose, that there would be some type of set way of, this is how we're going to play, these are our ideals, these are our morals, if you don't fall in with that, you're gone, and having a hard line like that. And I think, you know, they don't have to do it exactly. They want to play a 4-4-2, and that's how they're going to build it up. then fine. If they're going to be a team that is known for, you know, kind of playing a heavy defensive mindset and then electric counters, cool, fine. Make that your identity, but make a freaking identity, because the Earthquakes have not had an identity over the last few years, and it's been, here's the players that you have, go make it work. And that's what has happened with Kinnear. That's what happened with Chris Leitch. That's what happened with Starry. And I'm afraid that's going to happen with whoever else they hire as a head coach. Starry had his faults as well, because he clearly wasn't able to get the players all on the same page, and clearly wasn't able to get the players to buy into what he's doing. A problem is, though, is that some of these players are resistant and have a history of being resistant to coaching, like a Florian Youngworth, like a Vaco Kvasiashvili. They're guys that have always just kind of struggled to really, really fit into a place, despite the fact that they're incredibly talented. For whatever reason, that may be, it's the inability of him to, because when you're in a position where you don't have control over what players you're given, it's on you to create the locker room atmosphere and get all of them to buy into what you're selling. If you can't do that, you're not going to be successful with that team. So I think that's a lot of that's on Starry. I think a lot of the tinkering for the most part came with just trying to find something that worked. I'm looking at it right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 separate formations, within Major League Soccer, according to who scored. However, 21 of the games they just played a straight 4-4-2. Every other formation they tried at least one time. And only one of them they actually got a win with outside of that 4-4-2. And that was a 4-4-1-1. I can't recall the game. I'm assuming this was a game against Minnesota, because that's, for some reason, those are the only games they ever won, seemed to be able to win. But, that 4-4-1-1 sounds about right. A lot of what he had to do was to kind of adjust on the fly, and I think everyone, if you look at it in totality, everyone here is at fault. I think the players are at fault, because regardless of who is the manager, they're likely not going anywhere unless they ask to get sold. And nobody got sold outside of, or at least traded, quote, same idea, outside of Quincy Amerikwa and Fatai Alashe, two players who relatively spoke out and who were known for being quite against some of the issues and the culture issues that were going on within the locker room. So I think you have those two getting jettisoned. Doesn't send a good message, especially when they're a very good overall. They're a great servant, but a great player.
They're good soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, and they fought hard in their time, and they sustained injuries and sustained a lot of developmental setbacks. Fatai Alashe, I think, had a hard time kind of adjusting. Kind of started to blossom into his role under Dom Kinnear. It has a future as a center back, as a good ball-playing center back in a possession-based system. And I think he also has a good future as a defensive midfielder as well. But, like, I mean, they're two guys who brought heart and passion on the field every single game. And they got kicked out because they didn't agree with what the coach was doing. But, you know, 80% of that lineup out there is going out there without any heart or passion, regardless. So I think that those kind of things, from Starry, those, and a lot of the issues, and Jesse kind of struggling to, I won't say struggling, but I think just in him coming to terms with how much control he should have over everything that goes on. There's a whole lot that's going on there, a lot of moving parts I think everyone's pretty much at fault for. But the way these things go is that the manager takes the fall, and ultimately he wasn't able to get a team to buy into what he had tactically and stuff like that, and wasn't able to get the most out of the players and able to make it all come together. So it'll be interesting to see how Ralston does at the end of the year. I imagine this is a bit of a tryout for him. I'm surprised they didn't give it to Ian Russell, But I think they felt that Reno, with being in a playoff position in USL and a lot of good development that has come out of Reno. I mean, Reno's been the only bright spot for this club developmentally and soccer-wise for the last couple seasons. And what Ian Russell has been able to do with some of the young players there. So, I mean, you look at I don't think they were ready to pull him away from that. I think Russell will be in consideration for the full time. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the last little bit of this season goes. I think Ralston today, in his first interview as caretaker manager, basically said that, you know, that their goal is to not finish last in the West. They want to get out of the cellar. And they said, we need to have a goal for the rest of the season. We can't just be going out here wandering aimlessly. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes in the coming weeks for them as well in terms of squad list. But I mean, I think, like I said, I'll stop rambling here, but I think that overall, everyone's pretty much at fault for how things have gone in San Jose, including Jesse, including the ownership, including Mikel Starre, but that's the way it goes in this business. The manager takes the fall first, usually before a front office or GM is going to take the fall.
I disagree with you, Dan, in the sense that I believe that Q had absolutely nothing to do with how poor the Quakes have been on the field this year. Let's look ahead to the big picture, Dan. You know, obviously Caleb Porter's hanging out. If we're hanging out there in the ether somewhere, if reports are to be believed, you know, he's potentially spoken with someone affiliated with the Quakes front office. Not that I think he would take it, just given what he says that he wants. But Bruce Arena's there. Siggy Smith just became available. If the Quakes want to experiment with another retread MLS 2.0 coach who doesn't know how to coach defense and everything. But, you know, if I'm looking at this from a head coach standpoint, Farinelli has a lot of control. I question, unless they specifically find a coach who they think has a really good fit in terms of seeing the assets that the Quakes already have and the room that they have to make, saying, I can get something out of these guys where the previous three coaches haven't been able to do. You know, you don't necessarily have a whole lot of flexibility given ownership and just where they've tied down some of their money going into 2019. You've got a GM who apparently rules with an iron fist, and you're given the assets you have, and you also don't have a whole lot of leash at this point. Is this Farinelli's last really coaching hire before he's potentially on the hot seat from the front office? And where do the Quakes go as far as a coaching search standpoint to try and lure someone, MLS experience or otherwise?
Yeah, so one point, I definitely think that Jesse Farinelli needs to learn to relinquish a little bit of control. I definitely think if he doesn't get this next hire right, he's gone. 'Cause four managers in a year and a half, or year 0.8, I'll give that. We'll say it's been, what, like 0.8 through the MLS season. That's rough math, but it's worth a shot. I think I'm not a math major. There's a reason. I just think, like, you know, four managers is where they've gone. Actually, it was three. Now they're on their fourth with the interim, and they will have had, by the beginning of their third year, they will be on their, under Jesse, they'll be on their fourth year or fourth manager. And that kind of pace can't continue at all. And I think Tom Fox, who is ahead of the, who's the team president, knows that. And so, yeah, if he doesn't get this right, he's gone, which is why I think, they're aiming very big picture with, Jesse, with it, or very big, in terms of big name as a manager. Joel Soria, used to write for us, but good friend, reported that they are going to, or that they have at least inquired, about Guillermo Barros Schelotto, who some, including myself, have, you know, from a distance kind of lumped into the men's national team picture as someone we'd like to see in. And, there has been rumors about him interested in coming to MLS. He has been doing very well at Boca. I think it would take a lot of money to offer him. I don't think the Earthquakes will pay a lot of money to offer for him. But I'd even argue he's not the right kind of person they need. I actually think, I kind of laughed when I saw the Grant Wall tweet last night that they'd interviewed Caleb Porter, and then I sat and I thought about it. And I was like, wow, Actually, I think Caleb Porter would be perfect for this. He may not, Caleb Porter may not have the right situation to come to San Jose, for what he wants and for what he would quote unquote need. You know, the rumors that he wanted full control of, soccer operations in Portland. They wouldn't give it to him. And so he said bye. I can guarantee you with Jesse Firinelli in charge of that club, Caleb Porter is not getting, is not going to get full, how do you say it?
Control.
Full control over any type of soccer operation with the team. However, Caleb Porter's ability to develop talent and squeeze the most out of talent, is unparalleled to, I think, almost, I mean, there are very few coaches in MLS and in the American soccer landscape that I think are better at doing that than Caleb Porter. And just because go ahead, I challenge you, go on to Akron Soccer's website last night. I looked at their MLS draftees and signees. Porter was there from, I believe, 2007-ish till about 2011, 2012. Players that he would have recruited at Akron were kind of getting out of the picture 2012, 2013-ish, after he left. That list is absolutely incredible. You include DeAndre Yedlin and Will Trapp, as two of the biggest ones that come out of there. You can go back, look at Steve Zakwani. You look at Darren Maddox and his ability to hold a long MLS career as a draft pick. I mean, his ability to develop talent there. Then you look at the Timbers with Nagby, who was with him at Akron, but with the Timbers, you have Nagby, you have him getting the most in developing Chara into being one of the best, you know, kind of destroyer midfielders in the league. I mean, everything that he was able to do with that team, it is so impressive now that you sit back and you look at that resume. And you know, he may not have the match tactical, wherewithal that I would think of, but he does have the ability to put a team, into a position to win the best possible way, in the best possible position to win, and has the ability to get the best out of players. And it's pretty hard line with his players and saying, look, this is how it's going to be. If you're not in, you're out. And I think that's something that would be really intriguing to see. I feel like that workplace dynamic between Porter and Firinelli would not be probably healthy, which is why I think Porter would maybe be the perfect hire if he was still available after Firinelli is eventually gone, because I don't think Firinelli, part of me just doesn't believe that Firinelli will change enough for it to be successful. I'd hope he proves me wrong, but I just look at this situation. You're going to have a guy, you're going to need to have a guy who can convince the team to buy into the tactics, and the game plan and the idea for playing, that he's bringing. And he is going to have to be able to coach them into success. I don't know how well that's going to work. I don't know the exact manager that would fit that mold, but that's what they're going to need if they're going to continue to operate the way that front office operates. If they're going to make changes, I hope they make changes and open it up to at least where it's a fluid conversation between a Caleb Porter type and a Jesse Firinelli. But those are pipe dreams at the moment.
Steve Ralston said in his press conference today, as you mentioned a couple minutes ago, Dan, that the goal right now for the San Jose Earthquakes is to not finish last in the Western Conference. We've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks on this show about the Supporters Shield race, about the playoff race. Let's talk about the ignominious race for the Wooden Spoon and the contenders. I don't know, what's the contenders, but in a bad way, for that. We, of course, have the San Jose Earthquakes, who I guess are leading, but, you know, they're bottom of the table, but leading in competition for the Wooden Spoon with 20 points on 28 games. I'd say all four teams that are in the running for it right now, Dan, are all on 28 games played. Then you have the Colorado Rapids, 24 points, so 4 points ahead of the San Jose Earthquakes. Tied with them are Orlando City SC and the Chicago Fire, who just got a big 4-0 win on Sunday on national television over the Lions, on 27 points. I have the whole schedule for those four teams, in front of me, Dan. I'm going to read it for you and the listeners now. Chicago Fire are at New England, at New York City, hosting LAFC, at DC United, at Atlanta versus DC United. Lots of playoff teams, lots of road games. Colorado Rapids, at Columbus, at Seattle, hosting LAFC, at Minnesota, at San Jose versus FC Dallas. Orlando hosting Houston, at Dallas, at New England, hosting Seattle, hosting Columbus, at New York Red Bulls. San Jose Earthquakes at versus Atlanta. This will probably be kicking off by the time you hear it, listeners. We're recording this on Tuesday the 18th. That game will be Wednesday the 19th of this week. So Quakes are versus Atlanta, host at LAFC, at Houston, hosting Red Bulls, hosting Colorado Rapids, at Seattle. The only game taking place between those four teams amongst each other is the second to last weekend of the season when San Jose Earthquakes will be hosting the Colorado Rapids, which I think at that point, Dan, it's probably a wooden spoon six-pointer. I would classify the Chicago Fire as out of the running at this point because their last really easy game they had left going into this weekend was against Orlando, and they got 3 points. So now they're ahead of Orlando, and they're seven ahead of the Quakes. I don't think the Quakes are getting more than 8 points in their final 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games. What do you make of these four teams, and who do you ultimately see taking home the wooden spoon in 2018?
I actually think that there's, I wouldn't be shocked if it ends up being the Earthquakes at this rate, just because they're 4 points down and they don't have very many winnable matches. Houston on the road is intriguing, but not great. Seattle on the road is not good. New York Red Bulls should come in and steamroll them. Excuse me. And then at LAFC, LA, I mean, I just look at this, I'm thinking, I think that, you know, they have the opportunity really to maybe get 4 points. And that would have to mean that a team like Orlando, or a team like, or Colorado would lose out, because the Earthquakes, actually would have either of them beat on goal differential. And I don't see that goal differential gap getting a whole lot better, especially for Orlando. That Orlando defense is just brutal. I actually think if there's anybody who's not named San Jose Earthquakes that's going to win it, that would end up with the Golden Spoon. I think it would be Orlando. Just because they're probably not going to beat Houston. They're not going to win at Dallas. They're not going to win in New England. They're not going to win against Seattle. They're not going to win against Columbus. They're not going to win against the Red Bulls. So it'd be on the Earthquakes to pick up enough points. As disgusting as that loss was, for the San Jose Earthquakes against Sporting Kansas City, they're entirely better than that. And Sporting Kansas City is one of the best teams in the league at the moment. So I'm not surprised that they steamrolled them. I'm not shocked at all considering what Sporting strengths are and what San Jose's weaknesses are. However, I don't see, I have seen Orlando in person, and they will not, I don't think they'll score enough goals to even come close to matching their level of conceding, in any of these games. They're completely devoid of ideas going forward. Sasha Kljestan is about as ineffective as I've ever seen him. Dom Dwyer is on an island by himself. And then you have guys like Yotun, who are good, but, you know, is probably better served trying to keep goals out for this Orlando team. I think one thing that I don't know if I have the quick time to pull up the results map. But if you look at that, you can look at the MLS results map, and look at how many points that was just something that I saw that, like, after even including that draw against Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, Orlando have picked up like 5 of their last 54 points available. San Jose Earthquakes have picked up close to 9 in their last, you know, like 8 games. So I think, you know, the pace is there, I think, in recent weeks for the Earthquakes to be able to eclipse them. But I think Orlando City is the only team that has a chance at getting the wooden spoon next to San Jose.
Looking at the form guide right now, Dan, the last 5 points that Orlando City has gotten, their last win is part of that 6-game win streak they had early in the year. That last win was May 6th against RSL by a score of 3-1. They have only had 3 non-losses in league play since then. One of them was on July 14th against Toronto FC by a score of 2-1. I believe maybe that was during Canadian Championship, but in any case, beating Toronto, when Toronto's on the road this year doesn't really mean anything. And then they had, And then they had two other draws, both at home against New England Revolution that required a comeback, if I'm not mistaken. That was 3-3 against New England on August 4th. And then on September 1st, they got a 2-2 draw against Philadelphia, in which I think at that point, Philly had a 2-0 lead at halftime and basically didn't play in the second half. So, you know, you're talking three games, all at home, all against bad teams. I think all three of which required a comeback. None of those are impressive in any way, shape, or form, and all of their losses are fairly ignominious. In terms of looking at the support and the wooden spoon here, Dan, there's two things that I'm mainly circling. All four teams are going to ultimately be playing a playoff team on decision day, and I think that could be impactful in terms of, you know, does somebody already have their standings locked up and they know that they're going to be playing in the wild card, they can't get the bye, so then maybe they rest some of their players in order to anticipate, you know, an upcoming Wednesday or a Thursday game for those playoff teams. So I'll just read off the decision day matches that they'll all be playing. Chicago Fire will be hosting DC United. DC might be competing for seeding or potentially getting a home game at that point. They're in seventh right now, but four back on Montreal. Colorado Rapids will be hosting FC Dallas. And then Orlando is going to be at New York Red Bulls. Red Bulls might have the shield. They might be fighting for the shield at that point. And then San Jose Earthquakes will be at Seattle Sounders. I don't like any of those matchups. You know, I guess the fact that Chicago and Colorado are at home is maybe the one saving grace. But at that point, I think it comes down to how seriously is that playoff team that they're playing taking that game, or are they just resting and playing their bench? That might be an opportunity. But the big game I'm circling here, Dan, is the weekend before decision day. And that's San Jose Earthquakes hosting Colorado Rapids. I think whoever gets a result in that one, I think ultimately, whoever doesn't get a result in that one, I think ultimately will win the wooden spoon. I think, you know, whoever wins it, that's either going to be the Rapids, at least as of right now, going +7 on the Earthquakes, or the San Jose Earthquakes will pull within one of the Rapids at that point. If it ends up being a draw, that's a de facto win for the Rapids because San Jose doesn't gain any ground on them. I'm going to go out here on a limb, Dan, and say of these four teams and their remaining schedule, nobody gets more than two results, either a win or a draw. I think everybody else loses out all but two games at the absolute most the rest of the way, and I think who ultimately gets that result when the Quakes host the Rapids at Avaya Stadium will be the team that doesn't walk away with the wooden spoon. I think Chicago is pretty much safe at this point. And I think just the fact that Orlando doesn't have any other games where they can lose ground on any of the other three teams, I think they're going to be okay on that front. Let's move on, Dan. It's similar talk about fantastic things that happened, but ultimately didn't matter in the long run. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, forward for the LA Galaxy, got his 500th goal, at the senior level for club and country this past weekend. An amazing, are we calling this a Taekwondo spinning back kick? I'm not entirely sure what the martial art move here Dan was, but in any case, that I believe tied it 3-3 for the LA Galaxy. But then ultimately LA Galaxy defense going to LA Galaxy defense, and Toronto FC ended up winning the game 5-3. I had a column on Last Word on Soccer this week essentially saying yes, the goal was fantastic, but ultimately didn't matter, and nothing that the Galaxy do, good or bad, is going to matter as long as the defense is as porous. Dan, what was your reaction to Zlatan's 500th goal?
I kind of flipped, man. That was like, I was totally not expecting that. And I laughed because I was making dinner and I saw it from afar. Cause I had my laptop on my island and I was kind of, and I turned around just at the right time to go cut my onion for my fried rice. And there, lo and behold, Zlatan in his ponytail is doing this wacky backflip. We were talking about it today, at Sporting's Media Day, and they decided to, we were discussing Pat, like, there's no other player in the world who would have tried that. I mean, Ronaldo probably would have tried to send a diving header into the far post. Messi would have taken it around, somehow beat and nutmeg the keeper, then chip it in from a tight angle. I mean, Zlatan is the only person who is taking that ball and with his back turned and turning and doing a spinning heel kick thing. I just think of, like Peter Griffin in the Roadhouse episode of Family Guy, just going around, just bam, Roadhouse. Like, constantly, I feel like Zlatan must have internally said Roadhouse as he made contact. it was an absolutely fantastic goal, and I put it on my face, I shared the video or something and said it was just complete bonkers. Because it is. I think the one that got me was someone was like, yeah, there's literally not an animation for that to happen in FIFA. And that's really impressive because FIFA's got most of the wacky crap covered. And if FIFA does have that as a way to score a goal, I guarantee you it's by some glitch or accident. It's not an actual program action that a FIFA player could make. So I'm excited for when they add that into FIFA 19 to Zlatan's game, and Zlatan is the only player with the ability to do that. But it was a heck of a goal. But as you're exactly right. I mean, it doesn't matter. Jonathan Osorio goes down and gets that diving header there towards the end. They get a late, cushion goal to make it 5-3. This was about, as much as the goal was amazing, the talking point, from this game is that Toronto FC got a pretty well needed result, against it. They looked a little porous doing it. But the Galaxy, just score goals. That's what they do. They score goals and they let them in. We'll see, going forward, which team kind of really benefits from this. I know the Fire are pretty far, or not Fire, the Toronto FC are pretty, they're up against it right now, but it's a pretty big result for them, going through the, for them to get that against the Galaxy, despite, the Galaxy posting 3 goals.
I think there could have been no more fitting goal that Zlatan could have scored for his 500th. I think that puts him, it's only amongst active players, I think it's only him, Lionel Messi, and Cristiano Ronaldo that have 500 goals at the senior level, combined between international play and then for their club teams. I agree with you, Dan. Nobody else thinks, I could probably count on 2 hands at the absolute most, all of the players in the history of the game that would think to do what Zlatan did. And I'm not sure that there's anybody else in the history of soccer, past or present, that would have actually attempted to do that. And to your point, you know, when you're inventing moves that now FIFA has to put into the game, you know, on the skill joystick, you know you're something special. So absolutely fantastic goal by Zlatan. I got into a little bit of a back and forth conversation with some members of Galaxy Twitter earlier today, Dan, when there's a legit argument that that isn't the best goal that Zlatan scored since coming into MLS. And you could make a solid argument that that might not even be the best, the best golazo that he's scored in his entire career. And that's just, that is an epitome of who he is. It's been who he's been since he stepped on the field, with 20 minutes to go against LAFC and who he was against Toronto FC. I just think it's extremely disappointing that he's on a team that is just completely dysfunctional to where, you know, he has to be at his peak. Zlatan could score a hat trick in every single game the rest of the season, and I'm still not sure that the Galaxy would make the playoffs if that were to happen. So I think, you know, as fantastic and as spectacular and as special as Zlatan is and that he's been since coming into MLS, the LA Galaxy is the exact, you know, quantity times minus one, if not more, than that. And, you know, I just think it's extremely disappointing that, you know, regardless of how you feel about the LA Galaxy, is that we don't get to see Zlatan in the playoffs. And I'm going to assume at this point that, Dominic Kinnear is probably not Brian Smetsering the Galaxy into the playoffs, which means he's not going to be back as head coach of the LA Galaxy. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty about the club going into 2019, which is going to be a very critical year for them. Zlatan, presumably that will be his last year playing professionally. All 3 of their designated players, will be out of contract at the end of the 2019 season. Do they try and win something, or is it just another holdover year and then you just completely reset the books because all 3 DP players come off the books and you don't retain them? Or maybe they do something with Alessandrini's salary just because he's getting older and he's been really injury prone. I presume the Dos Santis aren't coming back at that point. So then you're looking at yet another rebuild after 4 years. It's been a very tumultuous season for the Galaxy in the post-Bruce Arena era, and I'm still not convinced that Chris Klein and Pete Vianis, you know, actually have the wherewithal to do anything about it. And it's a shame that, you know, in a lot of ways they're wasting the last 2 years of, Zlatan Ibrahimovic's career. Let's move on, Dan. We don't have a whole lot of rapid-fire stuff to talk about for you this week, folks, just because there weren't a lot of topics or little nitty-bitty things that have happened in MLS or the greater American soccer landscape that were really good rapid-fire topics for us. So, Dan, we will head straight to Pick'ems. We will start this coming Saturday, Atlanta United FC hosting Real Salt Lake. This will be at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Atlanta's very good, Dan. RSL is very bad on the roll, but Atlanta will be playing This past Saturday, they were at Colorado Rapids. They will be at San Jose Earthquakes on Wednesday of this week, and then back at home against RSL. Who do you have and why?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Atlanta in this one, just because I think Atlanta's going to rotate the squad on Wednesday. This screams Andrew Carlton game. This screams as much rotation within reason as possible. If they somehow find themselves needing to grind out a result in San Jose, literally throwing, you know, Miguel Almiron onto the field will remedy that that need to get the result. So I'll go with Atlanta in this one, just because I know I don't believe RSL plays midweek. It is a travel. It is hard to play on turf. They are a bad road team away from the altitude. I just don't see it for RSL in this one, considering the fact that I think Atlanta will end up hosting or will rotating their squad. So I'll go I think it'll be close. I'll go 2-1 to Atlanta. It'll be tight. And maybe it's 2-0 for a while and RSL gets an 80th minute, you know, comeback goal that kind of makes it hairy there for the final 10. But I just don't see them, despite their hot run recently, I don't see them having enough, to topple Atlanta at home, despite Atlanta having a midweek game.
I agree with you, Dan. Real Salt Lake on the road this season, just 3-9-2. I actually think there's going to be a lot of squad rotation. You know, you mentioned that if, Atlanta's down to RSL on Saturday, just throw on Almiron and Joseph Martinez off the bench if they're not starting. I might think that Tata Martino actually flips it to where that's the plan for the San Jose Earthquakes, where, you know, maybe Andrew Carlton gets a run out. You know, you start a couple of other bench players. Maybe you rest Brad Guzan. Maybe you don't. You know, I think Julian Gressel probably gets involved in a more advanced role offensively on that Saturday, on that Wednesday, and then maybe you manage that game in terms of thinking, well, if we really need to get a result, then we throw on Almiron and Justin Martinez, and then you start the first team proper, the first choice starting 11 on Saturday. So in that aspect, unless really something goes crazy this midweek game at Avaya Stadium, I would expect Atlanta to roll just because it's their first team against RSL's first team. So I'll probably go 2-0 to Atlanta, you know, with maybe RSL getting a couple of really good chances in garbage time, but Atlanta definitely managing the result in the same way they did against the Colorado Rapids on Saturday. Moving on, another game with playoff implications, Montreal Impact, who got a big six-pointer against Philly over the weekend. They'll be hosting New York City FC. This will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Dan, who you got north of the border?
I'm actually going to go with Montreal in this one. They're really hot. They're finding ways to score. Quincy Ameriquois as their hold-up man and causing havoc up front and allowing guys like Piatti and Luis Silva to kind of get involved in the play. It's been great for Montreal. I think New York City FC is kind of having, I won't say an identity crisis, but I think some of their flaws are starting to catch up with them. Some of the concerns that people had about them at the beginning of the season are starting to catch up with them. A road game against a team that's really fighting for its playoff lives kind of has a chip on their shoulder as they feel. I know Quincy Ameriquois last week said he felt disrespected by the fact that a lot of the league pundits and the national voices had already kind of discounted them out of the playoffs and were, were going for DC United as that team that they think is going to pick the final spot. So they're kind of playing with a chip on their shoulder. I'll go 2-0 to the hosts.
I think New York City FC definitely at this point has a bone to pick and they have a point to prove. You know, I think the shield's pretty much gone for them. They're on 49 points and I don't think they're catching either the Red Bulls or Atlanta. And Columbus Crew, if they're able to get a win with their game in hand, are starting to creep up on them. Normally for every once in a while, folks, I like to throw in a because MLS pick. I'm going to say 3-2 to the Citizens and I'm going to say a PK for both teams in this one. I think Maxi Arruti and, Maxi Morales and Ignacio Piatti boss the midfield. I think a goal for David Villa, even though he probably doesn't go 90 minutes. And I think New York City FC gets out of there with a crazy 3-2 win. Lastly, this will be Sunday, folks, on ESPN. Philadelphia Union hosting Sporting Kansas City, 1 p.m. Eastern. Another game with an Eastern Conference team hosting a Western Conference team with major playoff implications for both. Dan, who you got and why?
Yeah, I think Sporting Kansas City is going to take this one. They're a very good road team. Philadelphia will be playing, looking at this, making sure I'm right. Philadelphia will be playing in Seattle, in what will be an 11 p.m. kickoff time, East Coast time. They'll have to travel home. They have Thursday, Friday, Saturday before their match on Sunday at 1 o'clock against Sporting Kansas City, who's the best team in the West right now, according to standings. And then they have to travel back to Houston for Wednesday's U.S. Open Cup final. That is a game I believe they're going to try. I think it would be foolish if you're going to try and actually go win that U.S. Open Cup. You rotate your squad on Sunday and you make sure everyone's rested and healthy for the match, which is virtually the biggest match of that team, of that team's
history.
Season. There a lot of, you know, history. I mean, this is a huge chance for them to go win a trophy. I think they're going to take care of that. I think they're going to try and go get a draw against Seattle. Hope that something goes crazy in the game at home against Sporting Kansas City, and then go try and win that trophy. But right now, with the current setup, it's very hard. I think it's pretty hard for them, considering their playoff status isn't entirely solid, but it's not, I won't say it's fully wavering yet, because there's still a little bit of work from the teams below them to actually get themselves up towards the top, to displace Montreal, or Philadelphia there. So, when I'm looking at this, I don't think this bodes well for the Union on this Sunday game. I'll go 3-0 to Sporting Kansas City on this one.
Once again, I agree with you, Dan. I think, this is probably, I would expect, I would expect Sunday's starting lineup for, Jim Kirchen to effectively be a Philadelphia Steel FC starting 11. I think you absolutely rest the first team and you go into Houston all guns blazing with your six shooter pistols and your 10 gallon hat on this one. I think they'll probably go and try and get a result at Seattle because they'll have a full week. And, they might think of that as, we're going to go to Seattle and get a result where other Eastern Conference opponents would. But I think you rest the team on Sunday in anticipation for having to travel to Houston, and Sporting Kansas City is a very good road team. They have a very good defense. I think they probably win it 2-0, and it's pretty comfortable in the second half to where they're really just seeing out the result at that point. Not sure if we're going to have a podcast before next Wednesday, Dan, when Houston hosts Philadelphia for the U.S. Open Cup final. So just really quickly, who takes home the trophy?
I'm going to go with Philly. Houston's been terrible lately, I think, for this one. I like this Philly team a lot, so I'm going to take the Union.
Marcus Epps with a brace. I think Philadelphia wins it, and they will do it in 90 minutes. That is it for us, folks. Dan, it is time for last words. Where can people find you on the Twitter machine? Do you have any shameless plugs, and do you have any last words?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, at Sparrow894. We do have a pretty good feature coming out on Sporting Kansas City's Blueprint for Building a Club from MajorLeagueSoccer.com. You can check that out, hopefully, before the match on Sunday. I think there's my shameless plug on top of it. I just want to say, like, this is, I mean, I kind of say this every week, go watch some good soccer, but these matchups and these games are starting to really, really, really hold a lot of weight in where and how teams will get the playoff seeding and the home games handed to them once it comes postseason time. There's a lot of big games going on over the next couple days. You got to pay attention to see how they go. This is the time to be tuning into Major League Soccer, because this is when it really starts to get intense. It's when the margin for error starts to get smaller and smaller and smaller, which makes for the most entertaining soccer, in my opinion. So get out there if you're a local team, get out there and go watch a game, because most teams are fighting for something at this point in the season, so it's worth getting out there to see.
As far as soccer Twitter personalities go, Dan, I think that Bobby Warsaw has been on an incredible run of form the last couple of months. He had a really good tweet in the aftermath of hashtag Starry out earlier this week. He tweeted this on September 17th. It takes time for a manager to implement a culture and philosophy. Sometimes it takes longer than a year. If you hire a person, you should trust them and give them time. If a coach doesn't last a year, questions should be asked about the original hiring process. Hashtag Quick74. I would extend that to say questions should be asked of the original hiring process and the people making those decisions. We talked earlier in the show at the top of the hour about how Sarri wasn't doing a lot of good things, and really that didn't necessarily work. But as you said, Dan, that was an indication of a lot of other issues going on in the Quakes, and getting rid of Sarri doesn't necessarily help with that. And clearly, to some extent, Sarri's failure in 2018 were the faults of others, including but not limited to Jesse Farinelli, who hired him in the first place and gave him the players to play with. I get that there's a lot of angry fan bases in MLS right now. I wrote something on the Anthony Hudson trusting the process in the Colorado Rapids earlier this week that's been getting some traction, some pushback from Rapids fans. But you look at it, Dan, you know, Orlando City fans are basically an angry mob on Twitter at this point, and they gave Jason Kreis, one of the more successful MLS 2.0 to MLS 3.0 coaches, won an MLS Cup with Real Salt Lake. He got less than 12 months. You know, I look at the Chicago Fire, where you could point a lot of things to what Veljko Panovic has done poorly this year, but Nelson Rodriguez has done nothing in the two transfer windows after having a really great January that involved Nemanja Nikolic, who won the Golden Boot, and guys like Bastian Schweinsteiger and Dax McCarty. So I get that there's a lot of, and then, you know, you look at Minnesota United, for example, as well, where, you know, who knows what's going on between Manny Lagos and Adrian Heath. So I get that there are a lot of fan bases in MLS that are unhappy, a lot that are about to or soon going to be eliminated from playoff contention for 2018. But I just think the Twitter anger in sports in general, but particularly around MLS for a couple of fan bases recently, has just been really, really angry and wanting results now. And if that's really how you're going to approach it, then the limit as that goes to infinity is ultimately becoming Toronto FC in the MLS 2.0 era, where you're just burning through capital on an annual basis and you're constantly just setting yourself up to fail in the long term going forward, because you have to bet the farm right now to try and win right now. As we were talking before we hit the record button, Dan, Peter Vermees has been with Sporting Kansas City in some capacity for a decade now. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, so, over a decade. Rome wasn't built in a day, and it took a while for Peter Vermees to turn the Wiz around. Ultimately, they became Sporting Kansas City and became successful. You know, if you're a Seattle Sounders FC, if you're an ownership group that has a lot of money, has a lot of other infrastructure, pull where you're able to get a game-changing player, like how Carlos Vela, got to LAFC, you're able to have that. But if you're not one of those, and you're a small market, you need to do something well. The academy is sowing the seeds and playing for the long run. Playing Moneyball takes a while to implement and understand what you're doing and getting the right players at the right budget prices, given how you have to navigate the MLS salary roster rules and regulations. And so if you're going to be an angry Quakes fan, and you absolutely, I'm not questioning your anger or saying that Starre or Firinelli or other people, anybody besides Q at this point, doesn't deserve blame on some level. If you're going to be that and you're just going to demand results and you're saying that you have to make the playoffs in 2019 or else, you're basically just asking to, when ultimately things go slightly awry or take a little bit longer, to just burn down what's been built over the course of the past year. Rome wasn't built in a day, and I think being at angry levels, if you want to be that, then you're looking at being some of these European clubs that cycle through managers, you know, for an annual basis. That is not a recipe for success. And I realize you don't want to hear that. Especially Quakes fans and Colorado Rapids fans whose patience has already been worn out in the last 5 years, but that's the reality of where the situation is. And I think just getting angry about it and demanding that heads roll isn't a recipe for success, and it's only going to become a vicious cycle. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter and yell at me about what I just said at LWS Matt Pollard. Follow us on Twitter and all social media platforms at Last Word SC. Check out all of our content at lastwordonsoccer.com. You can subscribe to Last Word SC Radio wherever you get your podcast. Just look for Last Word on Sports Radio. You find us and a bunch of other great stuff being produced here at Last Word on Sports Radio. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or your team at roughneckscarves.com. With that, folks, enjoy your midweek MLS action. Enjoy your weekend MLS action. We will be back next week to talk about the US Open Cup final.